Well, I would just like to take one more opportunity, perhaps not the last opportunity that I will take over the course of today's show, to say to Darren Kagan, who I've always found inexplicably kind of sexy.
Yes, you have. I'll vouch for that.
You know, I don't really understand
why I would...
Ever since
Natalie Allen.
Ever since Natalie Allen left CNN, I've been looking for some place for my CNN-related libido to go. And I know Darren Kagan is not a conventionally attractive woman, but I've always found her kind of sexy. And so I would simply like to say, no! No, 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 no.
What is she thinking?
She is unconventionally attractive. She's also apparently blind and insane. Because according to this gossip item, talk radio king Rush Limbaugh's crush on CNN's Darren Kagan may be moving past the hand-holding stage. Ew! Friends of the, ew! Are we supposed to
let's do it together.
Ew! Are we supposed to think from that he's, like, putting his cigar-infested tongue in her mouth or something?
Oh,
ew! Friends of the Lovebirds tell us they are whispering about marriage just as soon as Limbaugh's third divorce goes through. They add that he's even talked with Kagan's family about living happily ever after with the TV anchor. Emergency crews were there to talk them down from the ledge that they got out on. No, actually. He's really sweet, says the tipster. I don't know what the tipster is. I also don't even know who my tipster is on this. I know somebody sent this to me today to taunt me, basically. But I don't know where that person found
to taunt you. You sure it isn't made up?
No.
That sounds made up. You got to wonder about that.
Because, no, I mean, I would sort of divide my circle of friends and acquaintances into two categories. People who would attempt to psychologically destroy me with made-up fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who would insist on psychologically destroying me with actual truths. And the person who sent me this falls into that latter category.
Okay.
I mean, I think I know my friends and acquaintances pretty well, and their preferred methods of psychologically destroying me. So,
I'm sure your son didn't send you that?
No, I know. He doesn't even know who Darren Kagan is. I don't know about you, but I'm fascinated by this Osama bin Laden tape, including, you know, the L.A. Times had this piece. I think it ran in the Current, too.
Does he have a studio in his basement or what? I mean, he seems to crank these things out whenever he feels like it.
But one of the arguments that was made in the piece, it did run in the Current as well, saying basically that he seems to be trying to, I think the term was, rebrand himself. That first of all, he wasn't standing there with a knife or a bandolier or anything like that, and that his overall tone, this article suggested, was somewhat more conciliatory.
Right.
And that he may be trying to rebrand himself. So that, for one thing, he said during his remarks, he prefers to be known as a terrorist now. He just cares a lot. It's not that he's a terrorist. He just cares a lot. And it was also interesting that he mentioned Bush reading My Pet Goat. Like, he's clearly seen Fahrenheit 9/11. And he mentions that President Bush was seen reading My Pet Goat. And apparently, this comes from another source, but... basically that he also mentioned that My Pet Goat is well known among the tribesmen in the Afghan mountains, where it was released under the title Love Story. that's not my joke, but I wish it were.
When you first started that, I thought you were going to, it was a plug for your book.
Yeah.
So he mentioned that as well.
I would be proud for that to be my joke, but it's not.
Yeah.
The terrorist thing was a joke. Hmm. He said, look, you're a godless infidels, but you know what? People are people, you know? As far as I'm concerned, we're all together in this. He's seen I Heart Huckabees, too. You can tell Osama's not only seen Fahrenheit 9/11, you can tell that he's seen I Heart Huckabees. So we've got much to talk about today, and we also have guests, but I forget to check and find out exactly when the guests are. And Robert Dalek is on, I believe.
Right, 5:40, and then coming up around 3:40, assuming we get in touch with him, it'll be Zogby.
Yeah.
John Zogby.
And we could probably throw some other people into the mix if we need them. We certainly we have Patty McQueen live from our Western Pennsylvania bureau. And well, as long as the nerd faced Helnecki's out there holding those cords and stuff, let me just mention this because I mean this is sort of inside baseball a little bit, but not that much. You know, we're doing our election night coverage tomorrow, and it became clear to me at a certain. Well, actually, Dana was the first person to figure this out. Dana Whalen, who is. And Steve Kotchko may be the hardest working man in Connecticut broadcasting, but there's no question about who the hardest working person was.
Right. It's Dana.
Definitely Dana Whelan.
She never goes home.
She never goes home. I mean, she's just on top of everything. She thinks ahead, and, I mean, she's the only one here who's just not making it up as they go along. So on Friday,
the fact that she thinks gets her leg up on some people.
So on Friday, after our show, Dana kind of flagged me over and said, you know, I really can't, because I'm supposed to go to the coaches on Tuesday night, which is supposed to be where all the Democrats are going to be.
Right.
But Dana calls me over and she says, you know, I can't really establish that anybody's going to be at coaches. I can't really, you know, I couldn't really say for sure that anybody's. And then the other hardest working person in broadcasting, Kochko, was sort of saying the same thing. So we started to get nervous, like maybe I'll be over there just with my, I mean, my dread was, and there's a novel by Jean-Paul Sartre that's based on this idea, that I would be alone with Mark Davis, basically. You know, there'd be nobody else in coaches but me and Mark Davis. that does sound like a Jean-Paul Sartre novel. But anyway.
Hell of an evening, though.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We just continued to pursue this and investigate this a little bit more and stuff. So finally, it became clear to me that, and this, the reason I'm telling you this, and I guess we'll have to continue it after the break, is I think it gives you kind of a good picture of what's going on in the Democratic Party at the state of Connecticut. I don't think they really had a very well-worked-out plan to be together at all on election night, because they don't give a rat's patootie about one another. And Dodd is having this big self-congratulatory party. It's called Chris Dodd Salutes Chris Dodd at the Norwich Inn, and to which a lot of people aren't invited. And he's not coming up to Hartford. And it just was clear that there wasn't really any kind of coherent plan to present the Democrats. You know, usually they also show up somewhere and they get up on the stand and they all hold hands and at least pretend to like one another. But they weren't even going to do that. And in some respects, I think they're still not. Anyway, we'll tell you more about this after the break.
The couple. Well, there's No Child Left Behind, is it?
Yeah. Or actually, the theme of that record would be No Shondell Left Behind. The if you were wondering whether there's a dirtier, more low-down, stinky, smelly, disgusting race taking place in America than, say, Simmons versus Sullivan, whether any candidate is doing things even lower than what Rob Simmons is prepared to do to win a political contest, the answer is yes, but you really have to go looking to find it. And the answer does come from Bucks County in Pennsylvania, and where, in fact, Jeannie Schrader is the Democratic candidate. And a recent Republican mailing attempted to link her to Hezbollah. This is like some nice housewife from Pennsylvania. I mean, you know, this is not somebody with a lot of background in this. This could be Jeannie calling me right now. She's running against some guy named Mike Fitzpatrick, who, of course, and this is going to sound very familiar to those of you who sort of followed the career of Rob Simmons. Mike Fitzpatrick says basically that he can't do anything about this, but he did call the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee and ask them to stop, but he doesn't really have any control over things like this.
He called and got a busy signal.
Right. But it is just a mind-boggling. Now, this woman, Jeannie Schrader, I don't know whether she's Jewish. Maybe just her husband's Jewish or something. But her daughter is Jewish. She has Jewish grandkids and stuff like that. And they're getting, I mean, you know, one of the things that inevitably happens when you have these kind of dirty, low-down mailings is they wind up going to, like, the candidate's family, too. So I think Jeannie Schrader's daughter, who's Jewish, and her kid got this mailing about how grandma is in Hezbollah. So she's become so upset that at one point she walked off stage in the middle of a debate because she couldn't stand them anymore. The factual basis for this, by the way, this mailing also says the Hate America crowd has found their candidate. And then they charge that Schrader raised money for her campaign by showing a film filled with propaganda that Hezbollah-related organizations offered to distribute. There's the film was Fahrenheit 9/11. That's the Hezbollah film, basically. So, So anyway, that's their whole theory about this anyway. That in July, she hosted a viewing of Michael Moore's film Fahrenheit 9/11, raising about $700 for her campaign. And she gave a speech there. Now, the Republicans are citing a June story in the London Guardian that said their organization's, quote, related to Hezbollah, had offered to help distribute the film. So think about how tenuous the connection that is. Organizations related to Hezbollah had offered to help distribute the film. That's the Hezbollah connection.
Seems like solid to me.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Here we go. Somebody is, actually.
I've heard it.
Maybe Ralph's using it. I know it's probably Simon. I'm saying who's using it. I think somebody's using it in the campaign.
I've heard it in the campaign.
Yeah.
I've heard it. No, wait. No, hold it. Wait a minute. I heard it in a commercial.
Yeah. You know what? I think it might be the Andy Fleischman campaign theme song.
No, that's not the Andy Fleischman campaign theme song.
You're sure about that? No. Well, we'll have to find out. It's somebody's campaign song. We can't remember.
He's looking for a song called Can't Find Nobody to Run.
Wouldn't you love somebody to run? Don't you need somebody to run?
That's it.
You better find somebody to run. All right. Andy is no opponent. That's what that joke is. But he's locked in a death grip against his non-opponent.
He's actually, to make it interesting, is running against himself.
Yeah. Let me just say something. He's not taking this one for granted, anyway. And there may be no opponent, but he's showing up every day.
We're glad to hear his commercials.
Yeah. Now, I have to say that there were more people interested in my Packers yesterday than ordinarily are. And that, of course, is because of this weird jinx thing that says that when the Redskins win at home, the incumbent wins. And this has happened, like, since Rutherford B. Hayes or something.
Right.
And it happened going back to the time when the Redskins were actually an Indian tribe. So anyway, they won. So they did their job. And there's more football news, which is, one of these Sinclair stations had the kind of reduced version of Stolen Honor, which is the anti-Kerry documentary. So they ran a half an hour of it on their ABC affiliate in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And the Time was purchased by Newton Media, a Virginia-based media placement company that says it was founded, quote, on biblical principles.
Right.
And includes a number of media ministries among its clients. Anyway, when it ran, angry callers flooded the customer service lines at this station, WPLG, in Miami, Fort Lauderdale.
The big plug.
The big plug. And the reason was, not because they hated the documentary so much, but the Michigan State football game was tied 37-37 and was about to go into overtime, and suddenly this anti-Kerry Stolen Honor thing.
That's good.
Wasn't there some kind of incident where some station ran Heidi?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like...
It was Heidi and there's a... Yeah.
And hundreds of little blind girls were attacked on the street by angry Jets and Raiders fans.
When you mentioned Sinclair, I thought they were running the Unpatriots game.
Right. But anyway, apparently the biblically based media firm didn't really sort of think too carefully about this and just kind of bought some time. But anyway, that's the two football stories.
Very good.
I try to group everything now.
I've noticed
everything.
I know the election is the big thing today, and you know,
but that doesn't mean tomorrow. We can't talk about other things, yeah.
Right, that's the question. Do we in fact have any science news today?
We'll have science news. Oh yes, we have to get it on Twitter. That's right, because we have Bobby Dalek going to be joining us.
Yeah, just like he did Friday.
Well, Bobby Dalek, this is a historian who sang Splish Splash and Mac the Knife. And stuff.
No, that's. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he'll be joining us at 5:40, and we have time to take your phone calls. We'll do science news. I'll gather up some science news for the 4:40 segment.
Okay.
And then there's one day. On Loser Day, Wednesday.
Loser Day.
It's going to get very complicated because the psychiatrists are coming in around 4:30 or 5, I think. Mm. We might have to do our sports thing kind of early.
They're coming in around 4:30 or 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what we'll do is. Or maybe 3:30. It's very complicated. I guess I don't really know what I'm talking about. But anyway, it's important to get the word out to the people. I mean, my feeling is anytime during the day from 3 to 6 on November 3rd, if you lost an election, you can come in here. I've got to work on the pizza thing. I'd like to do like a no-bid pizza contract somehow. Does Tomasi's actually own a pizza parlor? They probably
must.
Don't.
They must have some influence, though, somewhere with it.
See, Pizza King used to provide pizza. On November 3rd, we're going to have the show for anyone who's lost an election. They can come in, they can have pizza and some psychiatric counseling. And maybe we should also offer, see if we can get a massage person to come and give them a massage. Like with a massage.
Come in and give us a massage.
Give us a massage. And there'll be, Mario Cuomo will join us as a guest that day. I'm not making that up. He actually will. And or at least he's actually scheduled to. And I haven't asked Curry whether he would be willing to give an inspirational speech to the people.
Wait a minute.
But he did that a few years ago.
Opportunity to talk?
Yeah. He did do that
a
few years ago.
And you would question whether or not he would take that opportunity?
Well, I haven't asked him yet. I haven't approached him yet. So that's two things I have to solve. I have to ask Curry whether he would give an inspirational speech on November 3rd. And I have to find a pizza contractor.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. You can kill two birds with one stone.
Have him pick up
Have Curry call the pizza place. And try his speech out on them.
Yeah, try that. Well, see, Pizza King was inextricably linked, I think, with Bill Curry's political destinies. But we don't have them anymore. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah. So we need to find somebody else.
Are we paying for this pizza?
I don't know. We didn't. I think Pizza King used to comp us.
That would be the problem here.
Well, in terms of finding a pizza contractor. You know what? I'd freaking buy pizza for these people. If people actually show up. Getting people to come in that day, getting people to rise out of their pathetic self-pity and stop lying on the floor crying and vomiting long enough to come in and get a little sympathy from us and some actual constructive advice how to get on with their lives, getting people to come in has been difficult. Some people have. Ben Andrews came in. Kevin O'Connor, after he got his ass beaten, he came in.
Yep.
However many years ago that was. We were in the Gold Building.
Curry's been in here, 8 or 10 times?
The only time Curry's actually been in here as a client was last time.
But he was actually
but
good.
But he gave the inspirational speech on the day that Ben Andrews and Kevin O'Connor and those guys came in.
He was actually good, though, last time when he came in here, because I know you got to feel pretty bad after he went through.
And he was really funny.
And he was great. He came in, he was funny.
You've got to give him credit. He was really funny.
I give him all the credit in the world.
Give him credit, and whoever prescribed whatever he took that day, they did a great job with the men. I think it's good to give props to the psychopharmacological people.
I think so.
So, but no, he was very funny that day. And well, we had a nice little party. And it'll be a nice little party this year. And
maybe
Andy could come in, because technically he will both win and lose, I think, existentially.
Oh, I think Andy should come in anyway. What better motivational individual than Andy Fleischer?
Getting Andy, well.
Yeah. All right, okay. So there's
In terms of luring other people to come here, it might not be a good idea to really stress the fact that Andy's going to be here. Particularly because he will have won an election without ever having actually run against anybody. And the people who lost elections may be a little bitter on that score.
We could only hope we could get the loser of that Billy Ciotto, Ralph talk thing.
I hope. Well, if Ralph loses... By the way, we're also releasing a special CD in which Billy Ciotto speaks two consecutive sentences. That'll be coming out after... after the election. It's a special CD. You can order that from WTIC, right care of Steve Salhaney, to get that one. But if Ralph loses, I hope he'll come in. He certainly has a personal invitation. Psychiatrist.
Well, you can't say that.
They do. They usually bring meds for us.
Well, they bring meds. Okay, fine. They're psychiatrists.
So we're going to have a pizza and Vicodin party here, and you're all invited.
That's good. Promote that. Wonderful.
But really, seriously, if you're... no, they're very responsible about their prescriptions. At least I have found them to be. No, it's a joke. But I know if you're listening to this right now, you don't think you're going to lose your election. But you know what? Half of you are going to lose your election. So if that happens, come on in.
Make a contingency plan now.
Yeah. And you can just jump on the website and get the directions and just come on in. Because are there directions on our website? They might only be on the FM website.
I have no idea.
Because we don't really like people coming to visit our stations. So anyway, that's the plan with that. And our numbers here are 5. Well, they'll call now because we're almost out of time. It doesn't make any difference. Well, there's no point giving them the numbers. But anyway, we're going to do science news. Just a few science news items, because we have to sort of stay focused on the election. But I'll just do a few interesting science
items.
It
would be a crime not to ask some science.
Yeah, it seems I've been trying to develop this rhythm here anywhere. I do present some interesting science news. We broke the little people...
Absolutely.
Homo Salhaneus. story. I mean, we had it like ahead of everybody, except maybe like National Geographic and Ralph Talk. See my dancing?
Yeah.
I was getting that one in my bed, so.
See what I got?
Whoa.
This is big.
Looking at it on CNN.
Yeah, but it's a map.
It's the fold-out of Wolf Blitzer.
It's got a map, so you can put all the stickers in when they go red or blue.
Wolf is quite the leggy thing, isn't he?
But I thought, you know, this could come in handy tomorrow night.
For tomorrow night when you and Ray and Zinnoway are anchoring.
We're sitting here anchoring.
Don't let Ray play with it. Only you can play with it. All right, that's the rule.
Yeah. So what time does Ray have to go home and go to bed? Like, probably what, about 8 o'clock?
I'm not really sure exactly what the plan is.
Or
what
I'm
plan
sure
is for tomorrow night.
I'm sure you'll have to leave, you know.
Yeah.
Ray requires what? An hour of sleep a night? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. So I believe 9:30 to 10:30 is Peppermint Schnapps Hour tomorrow on our campaign coverage. So definitely don't let him play with the map during that time.
Stop.
He'll be stuck everywhere.
Stickers all over my face.
All right, so I have to be honest. I don't have very good science things. I mean, well, I have one that's actually significant and important.
Why don't you whip them out here, and we'll be the judge of whether or not.
This is actually somewhat significant, even in terms of the political election. And this sounds like something I might have made up, but it's not. I didn't.
It all sounds like it's something you made up.
Yeah. You know the stem cell lines that are available for federally funded research in the United States?
Uh-huh.
They may have mouse DNA mixed up in them. So they wouldn't be any good because they're like part mouse.
Wow.
Apparently,
you don't want that. That's bad.
It's bad. It's just that after a while you start squeaking and stuff like that. You start, for example,
tail.
Yeah. If you had like one of those frozen raspberry stem cell margaritas and stuff like that, it might have some mouse in it. And it turns out that embryonic stem cells cultivated on a scaffolding of mouse feeder cells take on the properties of the rodent cells. This really does sound like a 1950s movie.
Yeah.
Bring me the stem cells. But, doctor, they've been contaminated with rodent DNA. Oh, I don't care. They said I was mad at university, Jamie. But I'm going to use these stem cells now. That's all I've got so far, actually. I mean, in terms of that particular screenplay.
And you're going to be out covering political candidates? Oh.
They laughed at me at university, Jamie. They said I was mad.
They were pretty right.
They said mouse stem cells could never be productive. But I'm going to prove them wrong. They won't laugh at me anymore. All right. All right, that's one. Okay.
One down.
That's one down. I only have one other science thing. And so we'll be taking phone calls at 522-WTIC. We'll be taking phone calls at 522-WTIC.
Oh, I'm sure.
1-800-966-WTIC.
Lined right up.
Hold us up now, Jamie. Come on in. Come on in out of the rain. All right, here's the other thing. Turns out dolphins used to be really stupid. Used to be really stupid. Well, they're really smart now. 47 million years ago, they were dumb as dirt. And so they were just floating around. They didn't know nothing. And it turns out that the growth happened in two spurts. I mean, now they're really smart and they can perform mental feats and they can play chess and they can do your taxes and all that kind of stuff and read the New York Times to you. But back in the old days, they didn't know how to do anything. And it turns out they found 66 fossilized skulls of dolphin ancestors, adding to the only five that had been previously studied previously.
Where did they find these?
On the WTIC tax sale. Some guy was selling them. They studied these fossilized skulls.
I thought it said right at the beginning of the show, no real estate, no firearms, no dolphin skulls. Pretty sure that's what it is.
No aquatic mammal skulls, actually, is the rule.
Oh, sorry.
They studied the fossilized skulls dating back 47 million years, and they came to the conclusion that the dolphins' brains got bigger in two growth spurts, brain growth spurts. And the other thing you need to know, I didn't know this, actually, and this sounds like something that Mr. Ambrosio might claim. It really does. But this is according to New Scientist, which is a terrific British science magazine. They say dolphins' earliest ancestors were land-based hoofed creatures that became aquatic, losing their hind legs and gaining flippers over time.
How did that
happen? Not only were dolphins stupid, they were horses. Dolphins used to be stupid horses.
How did they lose their legs and develop flippers?
Well, after a while, you're swimming around in the water, you think, what's the point of having legs? I should be better off in flippers. So it becomes more adaptive. So the mutated ones that have flippers, then they have more kids. And so that's Darwinian genetics for you.
Gotcha.
About 35 million years ago, those flippered creatures were about the size of small baleen whales, about 9 meters long, had sharp teeth, and an encephalization quotient. That's, that refers to the brain mass of 0.5. Humans have an encephalization mass right now of 7. So their brain's got a lot bigger, all the way up to 2.5, all in one big growth spurt. I don't know what this means or why it's important, but it's important to know anyway. I think the takeaway here is dolphins used to be really stupid, and they used to be horses. That's it.
Great.
Yeah, we're done.
Great. I think you underestimated yourself when you said you didn't have a lot.
And then watch out for the stem cells, because they have mice things in them.
Yep.
You might turn into a mouse.
Patrick in Weathersfield.
Patrick, they laughed at me at university.
Hey, Colin, downtown Newington, Main Street and 175. On one corner, you got Caponero and his crowd, and on the other corner, you got Seattle and his crowd. Everyone's down here beeping horns and stuff.
And does it look like there's going to be trouble? Is there going to be a rumble?
No, it's a lot of fun driving through listening to it, though.
You got sharks and jets?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Snapping their fingers and glaring at each other. Do you actually have the Kennedys himself, Billy Seattle,
yeah,
the man?
Yeah, they're both there. They're both there.
And then Ralph, who's the host of Ralph Talk.
Yeah. Oh, no violence.
Well, we can only hope.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Billy Seattle.
Action coverage right there for you.
Never forget that Billy Seattle was the man who proposed the grape as the state fruit. What has Ralph ever done of a magnitude like that?
That's right.
Yeah.
You do bring up an interesting point.
Yeah. Whereas Ralph has hosted this TV show. I don't know. What else does Ralph do?
I'm not really aware.
You're not knowledgeable on the subject of Ralph.
I met Ralph once.
You've met Ralph?
Yes.
Under what circumstances did you meet Ralph?
I was having lunch with Mr. Dean at a Rocky Hill eating establishment when over-cruised Ralph and his wife at the time. I don't know. There's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Several years ago.
Several years ago. Okay.
6-7 years ago, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. And that's when you met Ralph from Ralph Bar? Yeah. And it wasn't Bill Curry like the sidekick on that show or something like that?
Absolutely.
He was like the Andy Richter of that show.
He used to sit on Ralph's lap. And Ralph would, you know, kind of like make him talk.
He was like the Arthur Treacher of
That's
of
exactly
Ralph
what he was, yeah.
Laugh at all, Ralph's joke. No, Curry's been on that show a bunch of times, though, right?
Yes, he has.
And in all seriousness.
That's what I understand. He's been on the show almost as much as Ralph.
He's a recurring guest on the show.
Yep.
Well, that's fine. You know, it's like...
No, it's not fine. Why,
it's like
why
Brother
would
Theodore
that?
Being on Letterman or something like that.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. Here's Bill from Weathersfield with some information about Ralph.
Okay. Bill?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Bill. How are you?
Good. I had some personal experiences with Ralph, and Ralph was a jovial, great old gentleman who inherited a lot of money from his father, and he runs 4 consignment stores in Weathersfield, but he puts his wife in charge of them just so he can do his TV and...
Does he devote full time to his public access broadcasting career?
Yeah, you go figure, okay? That's why I'm just giving you the basic information.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess isn't it like Bill Gates giving up like Microsoft so that he can run the tag sale on TIC or something? All right, we're back. That's Hugh Blumenfeld. And for people who want a copy of that CD I mentioned before, Billy Seattle says 2 consecutive sentences. Right to this station, care of Tucson. Send us whatever cash you've got. Make the checks out to Dave Helminke. Well, as soon as Tim speaking to Jerry Giratana, we can't figure out who it is. I mean, maybe they say at the beginning of that beautifully produced Jerry Giratana.
You know, every day for the last month, couple of months, I've gone home with a headache.
I'm sorry.
I'm laughing. So hard.
We should mention that every Sunday what Bruce and I do is we get together and we make omelets and we watch like Meet the Press and Face the Nation and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And we concluded on Sunday that, I mean, you know, after you watch like 84 different pollsters, contradict one another and really, I mean, they could put, they might as well put Sal Haney on there. I mean, they might as well put somebody who just, you know, really doesn't know what they're talking about, because these people don't know what they're talking about either. I mean, I can't even imagine a bigger waste of time than what we did on Sunday watching that stuff, because they don't know anything. You know, they don't know anything. They don't have any idea what's going to happen. None.
Mikey C. just came in here during the break, the news break. Do you really know who's going to win? How the hell do I know who's going to win?
And they don't know. Anybody who tells you that they know is lying or stupid. And it really, I mean, you know, after a while, it really does seem like it's a tremendous... I mean, really, if you're a pollster or a, like one of these guys like Charlie Cook or Peter Hart or something like that, if I were them, if I'd spent the entire, like, last year and a half trying to figure out this election and I'd arrived at this point, I'd want to kill myself. And because they really don't have any idea. And, you know, you can look, I really, and people send me polling stuff all the time, people inside campaigns. I mean, I not only look at some of the polling stuff that they have up there, I mean, I actually get to see, I get to see, like the big tree. Internal polling and stuff. Nobody has any idea.
What's the big variable? What could be, do you think, in your estimation, what could play the biggest in this thing?
I keep saying, I think it's organization. I think it's ground games. I do think that the kind of Tupperware style of organization that Ken Mellman has built for the Republican Party may help in terms of getting real turnout. You know, I think that's, I actually, it, and then the other stuff, I don't know, chicanery, I suppose. You know, Florida could be, Florida will probably be Florida. But, I mean, the numbers are all over the place. I mean, I've seen Florida numbers that have Kerry winning, you know, or ahead by a substantial margin. And then I've seen Florida numbers that have him in a tank, too. So, I mean, I know polls have been volatile in the past or close in the past or whatever. But either there are just too many polls or, you know, or there's something deeply wrong with their methodologies, because they really are all over the place.